This is the Infotagen podcast, the vaccine to the disinformation virus. In the USA, the Stop Hate for Profit campaign has persuaded major brands like Coca-Cola, Adidas, and Unilever to pause their advertising on Facebook and demand that the company does more to stop the spreading of harmful content on their platform. I'm Damien Collins, and I'll be discussing this and other issues with Jim Stare, the founder and CEO of Common Sense Media, which is one of the driving forces behind this campaign, as well as being America's leading non-partisan organization dedicated to improving media and technology choices for children and families. He's also a professor in the Department for Political Science at Stanford University in California. We'll also be hearing from our resident expert, the disinformation analyst, Dr. Charles Creel. Jim, it's fantastic to have you on the Infotagen podcast. I've long admired the work you do at Common Sense Media, and hopefully we can talk a bit about that. But I wanted to really start off on this latest initiative that you've been leading with other partners called Stop Hate for Profit, which is targeting advertisers, asking them to pause their Facebook advertising. Perhaps you could tell us a bit about how this started.
Sure. Well, we decided to launch Stop Hate for Profit because we are deeply concerned about the proliferation of hate speech, racism, anti-Semitism, and a ton of inappropriate content that has been on the Facebook platform and amplified on the Facebook platform for years. And basically, we felt that enough was enough. So Common Sense Media initiated this campaign. We joined with the Anti-Defamation League, the leading anti-Semitism group in the US, and a couple of important civil rights groups, the NAACP and Color of Change, to basically ask advertisers in the United States to boycott Facebook for at least 1 month, the month of July, and then to consider other measures that would hold Facebook accountable. And that campaign has been an extraordinary success. We've had over 1,000 major advertisers join us, and now we're bringing it to the UK and Europe because we want advertisers and consumers and nonprofits here in the UK to join us.
And you've had a huge success in terms of the number of advertisers that are signed up for this. And this seems to be a bit of a step change because advertisers in the past maybe have been slightly more reluctant to get involved in these debates.
That's right, Damien. We wanted to hit Facebook in the wallet. We wanted to hit Facebook where it counts because we've been speaking to the top executives at Facebook for several years. In my case, almost a decade, telling them to clean up their platform, sometimes from the standpoint of kids and families, but increasingly for the fact that they've allowed the platform to be used for election interference, but mostly for amplifying hate speech and anti-Semitism and racism and white supremacy. And so we basically thought that the best way to fully get their attention and hopefully force them to change their standards and their behavior was to get advertisers to withhold money from them. And so far, as you said, Damien, it's been a great success.
And I think the focus you've put there on advertising and amplifying of messages of hate, because there you're really talking about aspects of the Facebook business model. This is not just about free speech. It's about the tools that Facebook have created that help hate spread.
Facebook is basically the centerpiece of many of the hate groups in the world. It's really shocking if you think back on it. If I will speak in the U.S. context, but, you know, 5 years ago, white supremacy and the far right racist extremists were basically under rocks somewhere or were tiny little groups never heard of. But they used the Facebook platform to spread their messages, and Facebook willingly amplified those messages. And that was the place where so many of the violent behaviors were planned on that platform. You know, we also can recall how the killer in New Zealand live streamed mass murder on Facebook. So, you know, people of extraordinarily ill intent have used this platform now for years, Facebook and Instagram, to spread messages of hate. And what the platforms do, because they're algorithmically driven, is they amplify the message. They spread them and give it 10x or 100x the range that it normally should get. And this is not a free speech issue. That's just a bogus argument. This is an issue of lack of corporate responsibility and basically of a monopoly company doing whatever it wants to do under the guise of a so-called free speech rationale.
Yeah.
Because I mean, often the debate focuses on individual pieces of content because that's they get discovered and they get talked about. If they're certainly if they're promoting, you know, hate or targeting people unfairly or spreading lies. I think what's interesting about what you're doing is it seems to be more fundamental about the model. I mean, hate speech may be there, but it reaches an audience because Facebook tools help it reach an audience. And I was very struck, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, by the leaked internal report from Facebook, I think, based on the work they were doing in Germany trying to counter hate speech, that said that, you know, I think it was 64% of people that joined extremist groups on Facebook did so at the recommendation of Facebook.
Correct. It's shame on them. Shame on them, Damien. Honestly, if you think about it, and if you think about the top executives, Mark Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg and Nick Clegg from the UK, shame on them. They know this is happening on their platform, and yet they've refused to stop it. And we began this campaign, as I said, to hit them in the wallet, but also it better lead to regulatory action in the UK and in the United States and around the world, because these folks have proven themselves incapable of self-regulating. And I really mean it. It's just completely offensive, and it's inimical to values of civic discourse and to norms of democracy. One of the things that, even though this is really a civil rights and children's movement, it's really inimical to the norms of democracy and to healthy civic discourse. And the idea that a platform with well over 2 billion users, larger than Christianity, having more members and users than Christianity, would promote and amplify some of the most hateful content and revolting messages and be the platform where people organize around that is really shameful. Sorry about it, but I that's why we started this, and that's why we need companies in the UK and the audience for this podcast, all in the UK and around the world, to join in, because enough is enough.
I mean, there's been criticism of different social media platforms over the years because of hate speech that's found on there, and I know that Twitter, you know, you can get these hate storms on Twitter directed at public figures and celebrities. I mean, do you think that Facebook is behind other companies in the steps it's taking to try and counter this content?
You're absolutely correct, Damien, that this is an industry-wide problem, and that all of the platforms that use algorithms to amplify hate speech or racism or white supremacy should be held accountable. We agree with that. But hate speech is by far the worst. Facebook is by far the worst. And we should call it for what it is. But you're correct. This is an industry-wide problem. This is why we would like to see the government in the UK regulate Facebook and other platforms as the publisher that they are. You know, you could not do this on the BBC. You could not do this on Channel 4. You could not do this in the Sunday Times or the Guardian or the Daily Mail or on any radio in the UK. That kind of speech would be prohibited by the standards that those platforms are held accountable to. The only people who are exempt from these standards and who act with impunity are folks like Facebook and Instagram. And that simply has to change. And that's on the government to change, by the way, and the public.
Yeah, I think particularly the context of advertising, when social media companies and tech companies are becoming the sort of mainstream marketplace. There was a time, probably 10, 15 years ago, where online advertising was relatively niche, but now it's kind of where most of the money goes.
Exactly. And that's the point. You know, people forget. That's why I brought up the BBC. You could never do it. None of this would exist on the BBC, not over the air, not on their radio programs, certainly not on their internet, because they have standards and they're held to standards. And so are other television and cable and satellite systems. But the thing is, the biggest publishers in the world now today are the social media platforms, and there are no standards and they're not held accountable. And unfortunately, in the case of Facebook, their leadership is not accountable and has made some atrocious decisions about what kind of content they allow on their platforms and that they amplify.
I mean, Common Sense Media, you've worked for many years, promoting safe usage of media, broadcast media for families in particular, by rating content. Do you think the issue is that the sort of tech platforms have developed so fast that the sort of standards and regulatory models that we've created around other media just haven't been developed yet for technology, and at a time when the consumer probably regards broadcasting through the internet as just as much television as broadcasting into the television set in your house, but we need more common standards.
Absolutely correct, Damien. I mean, and look, you're one of the most important MPs in leading that charge. And Common Sense Media has a big office now in Europe. We're in London, and we've done a major distribution partnership with Sky, so that we're now all of our ratings and reviews. You mentioned Common Sense Media. What we're best known to the public for is our movie and TV ratings and reviews. You can now find them on Sky, and they're going to be soon coming to other UK platforms and European platforms. We're also going to be taking our digital citizenship curriculum. That's the centerpiece of our education work into the schools here into the UK. And we're going to need the help and support of the British education system and other really good NGOs to do that. But we are, in fact, now the largest tech advocacy group in the world. And what's one of the reasons why we came over and opened a London office and got to know folks like you. But the truth is, we need to help hold the tech companies accountable. They operate essentially with impunity and with no regulation. And so whether it's the UK government, whether it's the United States, whether it's the EU, we need clear standards and practices and enforceable regulations. And I actually think that you and your colleagues in Parliament have a very important duty to carry this out in the coming months and years, Damien. And we are at Common Sense eager to work with you and other folks to make that happen in the UK, because you can set a world example if you do it right in Britain.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, I think we've been, you know, trying to encourage the government to, I think, make a bit faster progress with the online harms legislation, you know, because I think it's really important that we do that. And other countries are starting to do it too. So Australia now has laws around violent content. Right. Obviously, Germany has its hate speech laws online as well. But I mean, you're based in California. You know the tech community well. Do you think there's increasing disquiet amongst people that work in Silicon Valley, that they're uncomfortable with the way things have developed and think maybe there's a different way of working?
No question, Damien. There's no question that the employees of Facebook now feel this crisis. It is a crisis for them on a moral level, in my opinion, because if you just look at their ratings and the opinion polls about Facebook, they're held in increasingly negative disregard. But I think that the employees of all the tech companies need to speak out. So part of our efforts have been obviously directed at this advertising boycott. And then also, as we've been discussing, in creating and hopefully passing important government legislation on issues like hate speech or privacy or platform accountability. But the employees have an extraordinary responsibility. They work in those companies. You know, these are private companies, so you have to hold yourself and the people you work with to high standards. And right now, the leadership of these companies has to be held, particularly Facebook and Instagram, but all across the board, needs to improve their behavior. And that is a very, very important effort that we're spearheading at Common Sense. And they are near us in San Francisco. We do know the CEOs of all the major companies, and we speak to them regularly. And in some cases, we get along very well with them. But this is an extraordinary moment in time, particularly during the COVID-19 crisis, because people are in front of screens a lot more, they're using the internet a lot more. And so we need a healthy civil discourse. We're about to have a very important election, in case you hadn't noticed, in the United States. We don't need any more Russian hacking of our election or misinformation campaigns on platforms like Facebook. So this is an extraordinary moment for all of us to pay attention to the social media and internet companies and to hold them accountable.
Absolutely. Well, as you know, we've just had the publication of the Russia report in the UK, which again highlights the problem yet to be tackled of dealing with Russian disinformation campaigns on social media. What I found, you know, when you're questioning these big companies in the public hearings in Parliament, partly, you know, you want to know what could they do, what's possible. What's technically possible that they could do but don't do? And we've had some other guests on the podcast who come from the sort of safety tech sector, who are working to design tools to try and be more effective at identifying and removing harmful content. I mean, do you think the companies have got the know-how to deal with this problem but just don't want to do it? Or do you think they don't know how to fix it?
They absolutely have the know-how. They just are too cheap or too unconcerned to do anything about it. These are the largest companies in the world, Damien. These are the wealthiest, richest companies, not just media and tech companies. They're the richest companies in the world. Go check the stock market. And the truth is, they absolutely have the know-how and technological capability to solve every single one of these problems. But they don't, because they're motivated by money. And they're basically, they've put profits over people. We've made that comment about Facebook repeatedly. They are putting profits over people, over the best interests of kids and families in their audience. And so they absolutely have the know-how and they have the resources. The problem is they've not been held accountable and they act with impunity. So that has to end.
And I mean, obviously, there's a lot of focus on the debate around freedom of speech, but freedom of speech has always been, there's always been a tension between freedom of speech and the harm that speech can cause other people. And it would strike me as well that you know, people may have the right to speak their minds, but they don't, I'm not an American constitutional lawyer, but I'm not aware of any constitutional right to have your voice amplified on social media.
Correct. And by the way, I am an American constitutional lawyer. And as you may know, Damien, I'm a professor at Stanford University for the past 30 plus years, and I teach civil rights and civil liberties, which is constitutional law. And let me be very clear so the audience understands it. The First Amendment in the United States protects the speech from government regulation. It has nothing to do with Facebook. So when Mark Zuckerberg or Nick Clegg gets up there and says that this is an issue of free speech, they are full of baloney. They would flunk my fifth grade civics class when they say that free speech trumps all other values in society. I mean, The free speech is an important balancing exercise. And by the way, our motto at Common Sense Media is sanity, not censorship. Mm-hmm. And I am a very liberal supporter of free speech. But there's a balance that has to occur. When you're promoting hate speech, when you're promoting violence, when you're promoting openly racist and white supremacist behavior, there's limits on that. But you can't. Free speech is a balancing act. It's an important one, and it's one where all of society should be engaged, and we have to have an important public discussion about what the right standards are. But the idea that free speech trumps all, which is what Zuckerberg and Nick Clegg and others have put forward, is a sophomoric and fatuous description of values in our society, and no one can take that blanket argument seriously. So, but that's an important discussion for us to have in the public sphere, and also for legislators to understand before they pass important and common sense regulation.
Absolutely. Well, perhaps we could suggest that Nick Clegg pops down the road to see you at Stanford, and you could give him a bit of a ABC guide to.
I think Nick Clegg is afraid to debate with me because he knows he would be wrong, and he may be a fine, respected UK politician. But he's sold his soul in the work he's been doing for Facebook. That certainly seems to be the case from our vantage point. And the truth is, I'm tired of hearing these simplistic descriptions of free speech as if, you know, if Facebook had been around in the 1930s, then Hitler's final solution would have been everywhere. And Nazism and some of their distorted and horrible policies would have risen far more broadly and more quickly. I mean, really, imagine if Facebook and Instagram had been around during the 30s and 40s during Nazism or during the height of fascism, because no controls would have existed. And imagine how they would have used those platforms to both organize and then carry out some of the most abominable acts in the history of humankind. So this is what we're talking about. You have to remember, when you've seen this huge rise in far-right fascism and crazy white supremacy stuff, and in the United States, all the overt, naked racism that we thought we had put behind us, much of this is because these creatures have been allowed to fester, if you will, on Facebook and Instagram and amplify messages to people around the country and around the world who are vulnerable to those kind of messages. And so it's a really major societal problem that requires all of our attention. And Common Sense wants to work with folks like you, Damien, and other people in the UK to strike a balance and to restore civic discourse and humanity and free, unbiased elections.
It was interesting you mentioned the 1930s, because of course, President Roosevelt created the Federal Communications Commission.
Correct.
And I noticed that part of its remit was to stop radio stations falling into foreign ownership and stop monopolies. And I wonder what he'd make of the current structures of social media today.
FDR would be turning over in his grave, and so would Winston Churchill, and so would many other great leaders in our history, because you've seen this extraordinary proliferation of hate speech and behavior. The problem is the speech leads to behavior and leads to terrible things. And it's a major problem in our country, but it's a problem in the UK and Europe as well. And it's time for us to have common sense regulation of this, to have standards that allow for different, many, many different voices. Again, I'm a civil rights and civil liberties professor at Stanford University. And we're big believers in free speech and in the right of people to say what they believe. But there have to be standards. There have to be limits. There has to be balance. And right now, on the social media platforms, particularly Facebook, there's none. And they're making money off it. That's why we call the campaign Stop Hate for Profit, because they're making billions of dollars off of amplifying these kinds of messages and behavior. And that's wrong.
Now, Charles Krill, you're with us again on the podcast. It's great to have you here.
I am, thanks.
What we've been talking about, but what's caught your attention in the last few days?
Well, thanks, Damien. Well, just to back him up a bit there, what's caught my attention now is QAnon. We've talked about QAnon before, but in a new move that seems to be leaving Facebook in the dust, disinformation-wise, Twitter has now stepped up yesterday and cracked down on QAnon conspiracy theory and the users that are promoting it. For folks that don't know, QAnon is a loosely knit theory, and it holds that Donald Trump is secretly waging an undercover war against the cabal of Hollywood celebrities and DC Democrats who allegedly run a secret pedophile network that's supported by the deep state and hold their meetings in Chuck E. Cheese's dotted around the Potomac, you'd assume. This is the same Donald Trump, of course, that wished Ghislaine Maxwell well earlier this week. But this is the kind of online disinformation that you would expect to see promoted by a bot, a Mr. Number in their at handle account on Twitter, operated out of St. Petersburg, right, as well as some unhinged extremists. But QAnon is also the kind of online conspiracy that you would expect to see tweeted by Donald Trump, if not a normal president. And in fact, Trump has retweeted more than one QAnon theory. So the folks at Twitter have now decided that they've had enough, and they've announced a broad crackdown on accounts related to QAnon theory. They're blocking URLs associated with the idea, and they say they'll no longer recommend content or accounts that promote the theory. And a Twitter spokesman said that QAnon resulted in, quote, well-documented informational, physical, societal, and psychological offline harm. Now, a lot of this language here is important. Offline is really important. Harm is really important. But also, Twitter didn't say that they'd ban accounts, although I'm assuming that they will. What they said is they'll stop promoting content and accounts. They will stop recommending QAnon promoting content, which is to say they've been recommending and promoting QAnon content. And this isn't some kind of trick question like, you know, when did you stop taking bribes? It's what Twitter said, and they'll stop recommending QAnon content. Twitter is way ahead of the game by comparison to Facebook and Google, but it really begs the question, why would they be promoting the content in the first place? And the answer is simple, and we've heard it on the show today. It engages people. It makes money. People retweet it, whether in agreement or out of outrage. Angry people click more, and the more people engage with an advertising platform, then the more money that platform makes for its founders.
That's exactly right, Charles. Very well said. I mean, and you're right. What took Twitter so long to ban these guys? What are Facebook and Google doing about it? It's ridiculous. If you just think about it, there's been so much disinformation out there and conspiracy theory around the coronavirus. And let's be honest, our country's response under Trump has been a complete and utter disaster. And to be honest, the UK's response under Boris hasn't exactly been fabulous. And there are terrible mistakes that have been made by the governments. But you've also allowed the amplification of this conspiracy theory garbage around coronavirus, which has had devastating consequences for the UK and for the United States and other parts of the world. And so you're absolutely right about QAnon, Charles. And it just reflects this broader pattern where profits trump everything. And that's insane.
That's precisely it. Profit does trump everything, and this culture around Silicon Valley of startups and the means of investment and quick exits and so on with no regard for ethics is a real issue, but it also is precisely what informs these social media platforms that won't toe the line.
You're right, Charles, and you're talking to the head of the leading organization in the United States and globally on these issues, and we're outraged, but we're delighted to hear folks like you and Damien speaking out. And one of the reasons that we opened our London office and have brought our not only our ratings and reviews and educational content that people love, but our advocacy to the UK is because we actually think that we might make progress more quickly in Parliament and in the European Parliament than in the dysfunctional U.S. Congress. Now, if there's if things change in the United States in 2021, we hopefully will have a much more robust regulatory scheme, and we will hold the companies to a much stricter regulatory structure. But in the meantime, you know, Damien, I've had this conversation with you. I feel it's incumbent upon the British government and for leading ministers like you to not just propose regulations, but get them passed and to hold the companies accountable in Europe. That's what happened with privacy. So Common Sense Media was the author of the California Consumer Privacy Act, which is our version of GDPR. It's now the national privacy law in the United States. But we learned from Europe with that. And so we'll learn from the UK in terms of regulating the social media and internet companies. So we really need the public that's listening to this podcast to speak out and hold their elected officials accountable, because the current situation is simply untenable.
I think there is a shift amongst the public as well. I think it's been pushed by different things. I think it's people look at the tragic cases like the death of young girls like Molly Russell and say, well, why are social media companies doing more to stop things like that happening? I think they look at the way celebrities and public figures, particularly ones from minority ethnic backgrounds, get routinely abused on social media in an open way, in the way that would never be tolerated in the street. But it just seems to be something they have to live with. And I think people are questioning why this is the case. But I think in particular, I think coronavirus, which is where we sort of started with these invitation podcasts, this is the first major public health emergency in the age of social media disinformation. And I think it's put a whole new focus on the danger of the anti-vax campaigns, questions about why did the social media companies let this happen? Because this can have a very dangerous impact on public health when we get to the point where we've got a coronavirus vaccine.
You're absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct, Damien. And you know, you're right. If 5 years ago, 7 years ago, Common Sense was really doing a tremendous amount of advocacy with, by the way, we remember the case of Molly Russell very well, with Ian Russell, her father, you know, around cyberbullying and some of the horrible things that were also playing out on social media platforms, like body image issues for girls, like my daughters, and so many young women around the world have faced because of the amplification of all the body image issues that play out on these social media platforms like Instagram. You know, we've moved now to this point where you're correct. We have the greatest public health crisis in our lifetimes. And the media platforms, instead of playing a positive, healthy role in us addressing it, in some cases have amplified absurd disinformation, misinformed the public, allowed conspiracy theories, promoted this crazy anti-vax stuff, which will, as you just mentioned, lead to many more deaths and much more suffering in a major public health crisis. So when we talk about the responsibility of social media platforms like Facebook and Instagram, when we talk about holding the tech industry accountable, I hope our listeners understand that this goes to the core of our values, to the health of our public, to the education of our citizens, and to the norms of our democracy.
Absolutely. Well, that's a great point on which to finish. I think time's run out for us on this podcast for today. But Jim, thanks so much for joining us. It's great to hear about the campaign and the success you've had. And let's hope it leads to the change we need to see.
Thank you, Damien. And listen, thank you for your leadership. We've really enjoyed working with you over the years in the UK. Lots more to come. For your listening audience, go to commonsense.org and find anything and everything you ever wanted to know about media, technology, children and families, and these issues. And thank you. And I really hope that the folks in the UK will support the Stop Hate for Profit campaign.
That's great. Thanks a lot, Jim.
You've been listening to the Infotagent podcast. hosted by me, Damien Collins, and featuring Jim Steyer and Charles Creel. It was produced by Lucy and David Dargahi. You can find out more about Infotagen, the independent COVID-19 fact-checking service recommended by Ofcom, and send us examples of disinformation you've seen by visiting our website, infotagen.com, or using hashtag IsolateTheLies on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you until next time.